sanctified. And I, of course, we all hope that God is pleased. For the third week now, we're studying basic conversion concepts, the first scriptures that individuals study when they're first trying to make a decision about whether to be a Christian or not. And as we go through these conversion studies and reflect on the very basic principles on which somebody makes a decision whether to obey God or not and whether to follow in His word or not, you might ask what benefit that is to somebody who's studied it before. I think our next slide here, this slide right here, that God's authority was delegated to Jesus, which was delegated to the apostles, which was who were inspired by the Holy Spirit. You look at somebody like Dave Shipp back there, and he has studied this particular lesson how many times in his life? 20 times, 25 times. What benefit does he get out of studying something like this? Well, when an individual is first coming to the gospel, there are two verses we often start with, where if an individual studies those two particular verses and thinks them through properly, right then and there, they are set up to accept the next 50 core concepts that allow them to be a Christian. And those words of Jesus Christ are in John 14 and John chapter 12. In John chapter 14, verse 6, a lot of times we'll start, you know, an individual's interested in the gospel, and they sit down, and they're looking at you, okay, what's going to happen in these four classes, whatever. And so let's turn to John chapter 14, verse 6. What's going to happen is we're going to consider the words of Christ instead of the words of man. In John chapter 14, verse 6, Jesus said, "I am the way and the truth and the life. No man cometh unto the Father but by me." And also John chapter 12 in verse 47, "If any man hear my words and believe not, I judge him not, for I came not to judge the world, but to save the world. He who rejects me and receives not my words has one that judges him. The word that I have spoken, the same will judge him in the last day." And so we'll ask them, do you think, forget what I think, do you think there's such a thing as people going to church and there's such a thing as people drawing near to God when they're worshiping? Do you think there's a difference? And how would you define the difference? In this audience right now, we're guessing it's possible that there are individuals who came to church today. When it's done, they're going to check it off and they're going to be on their way to heaven, right? You're filling out a time clock. You're going to church. Whereas there are others who, like it says in James 4, verse 7 and 8, perhaps, are drawing closer to God, especially during this next 40 minutes. Their goal is to be closer to God after studying these scriptures than they were before. And we'll ask an individual, what do you think the difference is between going to church versus finding life? And one of the differences that they wind up zeroing in on is when you go to church, you do it for somebody else. A husband goes to church because his wife expects him to. That would be a miserable existence. Parents go to church because they think it's good for their kids. To come and pretend that we love God once a week for our entire lives would be a miserable existence and wouldn't get us any closer to heaven. For individuals to come and to go to church because they think God expects them to go to church, you know, it just doesn't work. But on the other hand, Jesus spoke about coming to Him as the way, the truth, and life because we can gain knowledge of God and life and joy and truth, and it's like taking a drink of water. It tastes better every time. In Mark chapter 15, verse 17, there was a salutation for God, a saluting to Jesus Christ. A salutation's like when you say hello in America. If we see somebody on the street, we usually say either hello or how's it going or something like that. In Spanish, they say que pasa, which means, they don't say hello. Sometimes they say hola, but usually they'll say que pasa, which means how are you passing it. In German, they'll say wie geht's, which means how is it going. I've got a couple others written down here. The Chinese person loves his dinner, so he says how are you digesting when he sees you on the street. Try that one yourself when you know, see somebody in Walmart or how are you digesting exactly? Nah, I don't think that goes good. The Dutch say, how do you travel? A Persian greeting is, may your shadow never grow less. Same word for salutation is in Mark chapter 15, where some people walked up to Jesus and said, que pasa, except Mark chapter 15, verse 17, the soldiers pleated a crown of thorns and put it on his head and began to salute him, saying, hail, King of the Jews. Jesus Christ went through that salutation because he wanted to ransom us. And what we're doing this morning is trying to give Jesus a different salutation. If you pull the cross out of what we're doing this morning, it's all useless. What it does is it gives us a chance to rethink. how it is. You know, Dave's heard this lesson 25 times or something like that, but he still can rethink the straight way and the narrow gate that allows him to actually find God. He can meditate on that throughout the entire lesson. So last week, we studied about the first week, we studied John chapter 13, verse 20, where Jesus said, "Truly I say to you, he who receives whomsoever I send receives me, and he who receives me receives him who sent me." Jesus Christ paid the rightful price to own this organization that we're in. Romans chapter 14 in verse 9. "To this end, Christ both died and rose and revived, that he might be Lord of the dead and the living." God running things, not man. 2 Peter chapter 1 and verse 15. Peter said, "Moreover, I will endeavor after my decease that you may always have these things in your remembrance." We've studied all this before, that the Bible is there so that we can do things God's way rather than man's way. We studied last week the basic concepts and rules that allow us to cut this word straight. Like it says in 2 Timothy chapter 2 and verse 15, Paul said, "Just like I cut my tent leather straight, you cut the Bible straight. Get the answers right." That's what 2 Timothy 2, verse 15 says. We studied about Lord's Supper, direct statements, and approved examples, and so forth, basic rules of authority. We studied the gospel here within the last few weeks with a really cool married couple, a fireman and a nurse. And we talked about ideas like Acts chapter 20 and verse 7. And her being a nurse, does she understand the concept of authority and organization? Pose a question. Suppose I'm in a car wreck and I wind up in the very hospital and you're nursing me and the doctor has prescribed 5 milligrams of morphine once every 4 hours, but I don't tolerate pain very well. I'm kind of a baby when it comes to pain. You can ask Cindy if you think this is preacher hyperbole. You know, I tend to moan and groan, and I'm, you know, so suppose I talk the nurse into some extra morphine. You know, the 5 milligrams every 4 hours aren't cutting it. Could I please just have a couple hundred milligrams and then I'll be okay? And suppose she says, "I'm not authorized to do that." But supposing I whine so much that she decides to make the call, if this guy doesn't get some more morphine, he's going to bellyache all night. So she goes over and she jimmies the cabinet and she gets some morphine and she gives it to me so I'll shut up. She gives me 200 milligrams of morphine and I have a heart attack and die. What happens next? Well, I mean, besides them burying me, what happens? What happens to her? What happens to, pardon me? She'll have a quiet night until they come in the morning, right? And then she'll be fired, and then there'll be criminal charges and so forth. Do you believe, you personally, think this through, because we honestly, there's nothing up our sleeves. Do you believe that in a hospital there should be a certain person writing the prescription for morphine? She goes, "Of course, there's reasons for that." The fireman, same thing. He's got a fire chief, and then he's got guys under their departments. Any group of people that you are in, there's authority one way or another. Even at the jail, if they have a riot and they kill the warden, they've got authority. The authority is the guy with the biggest arms. Or even in your work group, if there's no leader, if there's no manager, the authority is the person who yells the loudest or is the smartest. In any group of people, there is authority. The question is just who. So when we've got a question of, should we sing a cappella this morning or should we have a guitar, the question is whether or not we're going to open our Bibles and let God design this church, or whether we're going to let the preacher and his pals make the call. That's the only choice you've got. And there have been sound churches of Christ lately in the area who've gotten to drifting on this idea of looking it up, have a book, have a chapter, have a verse. Here recently there was a church that got started and they were arguing bitterly over, can we have Starbucks in the worship service? It's a silly thing, just like my 5 milligrams of morphine is a silly thing. But if the nurse opens up the cabinet and gives me 1 extra milligram of morphine the surgeon did not prescribe, she will be fired, correct? Not because 1 milligram of morphine will kill me, but because the entire authority structure has crumbled in the hospital. And when somebody brings in Starbucks and says, "I don't care what the Bible says, it's not a big deal." The coffee isn't a big deal. It may even help you stay awake through the sermon. But what is a big deal is this was the first Sunday that we said we don't have to look it up anymore. And in that congregation where they started bringing the coffee in, and now they don't even call themselves the Church of Christ anymore, just a couple years later. They don't want other people to think of them as being like Church of Christians. They don't want visitors to come in and think they're like you. They really don't. It's not a big deal, except for the fact that Jesus is no longer in charge. That's the only sense in which it's a big deal. So we've talked about this over the last 2 weeks, that authority structure, it makes a difference between whether we've got a God-designed religion or a man-designed religion. And last week, we finished off talking about basic rules that allow us to cut the word straight. We talked about all these four, just taking a few seconds to go through them again. Many religious problems are solved just by knowing whether or not you've got the right law, whether you're studying the Old Testament versus the New Testament. In Cuba, they've got a law which says, if I'm going to teach the Bible to you, I need to be sitting down and we need to clear everybody out till there are 29 people or less. That's a law in Cuba. Do we care? We don't care. We're not Cubans. And when you go to the Old Testament and say, look, they used instruments of music back then, you don't care. Because Deuteronomy chapter 4 says, this is a covenant given to Israel who lived physically in the land of Palestine. When it says, you will slaughter a sheep on the Sabbath day to those people, you don't care. Because that's a law to Cubans. That's a law that doesn't apply to you. So cutting this word straight, the Seventh-day Adventists say we ought to worship on Saturday, which is the Old Testament Sabbath. You don't care. You're not a Jew. You're not living in Israel. You're living under the new law. Get it out of the New Testament. That's one thing that we studied. And make sure the speaker's inspired. Make sure the command applies to you. If it's a command to husbands and you're a female, that law doesn't apply. It's a law to a Cuban, you know, so make sure it's applying to you. And make sure that you obtain that authority either by command or example or necessary inference. Could we lock this in just real quick this morning by going to 1 Corinthians chapter 14? Let's read here together just a couple of verses. The idea of commands and examples and necessary inferences to establish authority. In 1 Corinthians chapter 14, I can prove to you that we've got the right to pray and to sing during this assembly. The whole chapter, 1 Corinthians 11 through 14, is all about being in the church, like it says in verse 19. In the church, I would rather speak five words with my understanding, meaning when they ring the spoon on the crystal glass and say, we're worshiping as a church, in the church, here's what I do, verse 14. If I pray in an unknown tongue, my spirit prays, but my understanding is unfruitful. What is it then? I'll pray with the spirit and pray with the understanding also. I'll sing with the spirit and sing with the understanding also. So I know for proof positive, an absolute fact, that in the first century, when they were supervised by the apostles, they got together. I can prove by that verse that they prayed and that they sung, right? And because we're sticking to the verses, then we're not binding what the Bible doesn't bind. We're not loosing what the Bible doesn't loose. Deuteronomy chapter 5 and verse 32. You shall observe to do therefore as the Lord your God has commanded you, not as Jeff Clark has commanded you. You shall not turn aside to the right hand or to the left. Let's consider for a second. If the Church of Jesus Christ at Sumner was going to go right or left over the next 5 years, what would that mean to go right or to go left? We were to go over liberal or we were to go over conservative. In real life is what that means, to go right or left. Those are the two basic mistakes we can make. Deuteronomy 5:33, this is just a general principle. It's in the Old Testament, but it's a cosmic law of God that you don't defy God. Deuteronomy chapter 5, verse 33, you'll walk in all the ways which the Lord your God has commanded you, that you may live, and that it may be well with you, and that you may prolong your days in the land which you shall possess. Sir Walter Raleigh was a real historical knight not too long ago, and honored not only for his ability to kill people with a sword, but also honored for his ability to present English examples of gentlemanly knighthood by his conduct. One of the stories around Sir Walter Raleigh, a lot of it's probably legend and myth now, but one of the stories around Sir Walter Raleigh is that he was walking down the street when a hot-headed Irish kid came up to test him. And the kid had a blade, and Sir Walter Raleigh had a blade. The kid walked up, and he started taunting Sir Walter Raleigh, and the crowd formed, according to this particular story, and the kid was trying to goad the knight into a fight, but the knight knew it wasn't a fair fight. And so he kept trying to get out of it until the young Irishman walks one up and spits in his face, and the crowd draws back. So Pastor Walter Raleigh calmly takes out a handkerchief, wipes his face, says, "Young man, if I could wipe your blood from my conscience as easily as I wipe this injury from my face, at this moment I would take your life." And he turned and walked away. Gentleness is strength restrained, right? We admire those guys because they're both strong and self-controlled. Same thing when we're talking about worshiping God in spirit and in truth, that we're not simply indulging our own preferences for a cup of coffee or a banjo or whatever it might be. We are restraining ourselves to try and do things honorably, which means do it as God wanted it done. You can go to the right or to the left. You can go arch-conservative radical, or you can go liberal. You can loose what the Bible looses. You can bind what the Bible binds. When God binds something and you loose, you know, that generally is what is defined in the dictionary as liberalism. For example, the Pharisees, God had given a command, take care of your parents, right? When you have a parent who's a senior citizen, make sure they have something to eat. And the Pharisees, even there, said, you don't have to do that if it's dedicated to the temple. Here's an example of loosing where God hasn't loosed. On the other hand, when you put your own rules and your own preferences and your own desires on things, wash your hands before you eat and wash them good. Where's that in the Bible? This is going off to the right hand rather than to the left, and it's the two kind of mistakes that we make that we don't want to make. When brethren go liberal, it starts with something mundane and picayune, like a cup of coffee, but what's next? Next thing that happens is that church will not be performing any discipline whatsoever. Next thing that happens is that the worship service will be led by men and women. Next thing that happens is that the church will no longer call itself a church of Christ because they don't want to be associated with folks like you. On the other hand, when somebody goes off arch radical and some guy starts we got to get back to strict morality, and he starts binding his laws as God's word, what's typical is the length of the women's hair has to be such and such a length defined by him. What happens is there's no divided classes because we don't want women influencing young men. And that has its own way to go. Do we want any of that? Hopefully what we want is a church where things are designed by God, where we only bind those things that God does and only loose those things that God looses. Micah chapter 6, verse 8. He has shown you, O man, what is good, and what does the Lord require of you but to do justly and to love mercy and to walk humbly with your God. I think you'll find that every human being on this earth has a natural tendency to be liberal or pharisaical. And it'd be good if you knew your own tendency. You know what mine is? My natural human tendency is to be liberal. When you talk about doing justice or loving mercy, the person who loves justice loves the law, loves the system, loves morality, wants the rules obeyed, or else everything crumbles around. The person who loves mercy doesn't want to hurt feelings, wants to see people taken care of. There's one person who splices those two things perfectly, and that is Jesus Christ. He gives you both. But every human being errs on one side or the other. Which one are you? Being aware of it might help you to avoid loosing some things you'd normally loose or binding some things where you normally bind. But our goal is to get them right in the middle. And there's a method for knowing which is what we're going to talk about for the second half of the lesson. General and specific authority, clear understanding of that, will help us know what it is that God's loosing and what God's binding without using our feelings. Rather by using a method. Matthew chapter 15, verse 9, in vain they worship me, teaching for doctrines the precepts of men. Once we start with man-made religion, we might as well nail the door to the temple shut. And that's what Isaiah chapter 1 actually says. Oh, that somebody would nail the door to the temple shut. 2 John verse 9. Whosoever transgresses and abides not in the doctrine of Christ has not the right to preach Sunday morning. We're just going to put him on Sunday evening. Is that what that says? Whosoever transgresses and abides not in the doctrine of Christ is going to be doing only Wednesday nights for a couple of years. Is that what that says? Whosoever transgresses and abides not in the doctrine of Christ has not God, is not on his way to heaven. That's what that verse says. Whoso abides in the doctrine of Christ, he has both the Father and the Son. So the warning that we've been given is a very clear one. So when we talk about authority, this isn't just a special idea that we have because we're studying the Bible. This is something that you use in every realm of your everyday life, the idea of general and specific authority. And the idea of general and specific authority is actually a very simple one. Revelation 22 and verse 18 says, anybody who adds to the words of this book will be added to him. The plagues in this book, anyone who takes away, God will take away his part out of the book of life. The simple idea of general and specific authority, which solves so many of these church problems for us, is that if you give me a general instruction or command, then the specific options under it are allowed to me. If you give me a specific command or instruction, then the other specifics are not allowed to me. Suppose that the city of Seattle gets a basketball team back in a couple years. Supposing for a second that state of Washington authorizes them to select their own name and pays for their stadium and says you also may have a live mascot. Seahawks are going to play in a little bit here if I ever get done with this lesson. Well, they're going to play regardless, but you're going to see it if I ever get done with this lesson. Do they have a live mascot, the Seahawks? Is there a live animal, you know, that they keep and they have a trainer and that represents their team? There actually is a live Seahawk, right? My favorite mascot in sports is the mascot of the Texas Longhorns. Have you ever seen that one? These guys get ready to play a football game and they run one of these things out onto the field. I don't know how they keep their field clean. But they run them out there, and here's a mascot. Now, supposing that the state of Washington told the Seattle Sonics or whoever the basketball team was going to be, you're authorized to have a basketball team, and you're authorized to have an animal. If that's what they say, then you could have the Seattle Dumbos, right? And they could roll an elephant out there, and they'd be within the right. But on the other hand, if the statute actually says, you are authorized to call yourselves, and this would be more typical in Seattle, you're authorized to call yourselves the Seattle Golden Retrievers, and you're authorized to have an animal representing your name. Then, okay, if they're authorized to have that puppy as a, this is a stupid illustration, but if they're authorized to have a puppy, then are they okay, you know, to call themselves the Vancouver Grizzlies and roll a grizzly bear in there? It's a very simple idea. And you say, Jeff, this lesson, do you think they had this lesson in the first century? Do you think in the first century they got up and talked about general versus specific authority in the year 70 AD? They probably didn't, and you know why? Do you know why in 70 AD they didn't have PowerPoint? And also they didn't take dirts and rocks and show the difference between generic authority? Because in the year 70 AD they had nobody saying, God didn't say we couldn't baptize by sprinkling. They took the obvious stuff for granted. We're in this discussion because somebody asked a stupid question. The folks who've been here for a while know I'm kidding. I respect folks that I debate and discuss with. We're just kind of joking around. But Jennifer's 4 years old, let's say. And I say, let's have some chicken and broccoli for dinner. And Jenny was a sharp, think for herself, four-year-old. She says, oh, Daddy, I feel better when I eat M&Ms and drink Coke for dinner. And I say, no, chicken and broccoli is better for you than M&Ms and Coke. And she says, prove it. I say, well, can't you look around? We've got people in here who are exceptionally fit, like Rogers here and my sister-in-law and Sant, and you look at them, ask them if they have M&Ms and Coke every night for dinner. She says, that's not good enough. To prove it to him. Okay, well, can't you look around at all the churches of Christ and those in whom the Spirit flows and those which this, they're blessed by Jesus Christ over the long term, and you can see their blessing? Can't you see they're sticking to the Scriptures, book, chapter, and verse? That's not good enough. Prove it to me. All right, I got to prove that M&Ms are healthier than broccoli. You really want to prove that? We're going to need overheads like this. What do you know about vitamin C? What do you know about biochemistry? Now we're in that discussion where his grandma just said, eat your broccoli. In the New Testament, they said, pray, sing, take a Lord's Supper, have a lesson, have a contribution. And nobody says, God didn't say, don't burn incense. But that's why we're here. Does that make sense? So if you want to ask the question, why can't we have a piano? Now we've got to study basic laws of grammar and how they took things in the New Testament, and that's why we're here. Does that make sense? So you take Genesis chapter 6 and verse 14, God told Noah. Lee, have you ever seen this example before of general and specific authority in gopher wood? Have you ever seen this one? How many times would you say? 15, 20, anyway. but you remember it. Genesis chapter 6, verse 14, God said, you'll make an ark, and you'll put rooms in it, and you'll put pitch on it, inside and outside, and you'll make it out of gopher wood. By the way, nobody knows what gopher wood is anymore. But is it a necessary inference it was some kind of tree? It was some kind of wood. All right, when God says, make it out of gopher wood, not out of oak or maple or wood, if God had just said, get an ark made of wood, that would have freed Noah to choose the wood, correct? If we were in high school, this wouldn't be 12th grade, this wouldn't be 7th grade, this would be 1st grade. But we set ourselves up for that by asking the question, God didn't say that I couldn't make it out of balsa wood. No, understood. Gopher wood. So when God names a type of wood, does that rule out the other type of wood? You know, the other day I asked Cindy to go to Walmart, if she wouldn't mind, and get me some black pants. And here they are. Look nice. Why do I say black? Cindy's going to kill me for this one, but her favorite pair of pants when she was in high school were orange and green striped vertical. Suppose I ask for black and she brings orange and green striped vertical. Is that complying with the request? The only reason I say black is because I'm thinking whatever you do, don't get orange and green striped vertical. I think they were purple, weren't they? Orange and purple was more what... there, now she looks more pleased. All right, so you take... You take a car. Maybe I'll be in better shape on this one. Supposing that I were to get Cindy a car for her birthday, you don't know Cindy as well as I do, would Cindy have a preference as to which specific type, or would Cindy be just as pleased if I brought really any kind of car home and set it in the driveway and it was new? Would she have a general request or a specific request? She says, Jeff, please purchase automobile, or if she says, Jeff, please purchase Chevy, how many could tell, would this thing be okay right here? When she says Chevy, that's so that I won't buy a VW bus from the 60s with flowers on it or whatever it might be. There isn't any reason for saying black pants unless you're ruling out the other colors. And the same is true in the scriptures. How do you know whether something's generic or specific? Words don't come in the Strong's dictionary with a generic or a specific attached. In 1 Timothy chapter 3 and verses 4 and 5, it says, make sure the elders rule their families well. If God had just said, pick elders, who can then pick a preacher or whatever the case might be, if he just said, pick older men, then we'd have the right to pick them, bachelors or with wives or whatever. But when God says, get you some elders whose families are doing good, are you free to get guys who are widowed and whose kids hate them? At the time you do that, you're setting your own will above God's. So this is the idea of general and specific authority. Let's go over to John chapter 1 and verse 46 for a minute. And here's where Jesus expresses one of his greatest admirations for a man who's fair, who doesn't have guile in him, who doesn't have misdirection in him, who isn't manipulative. In John chapter 1 and verse 46, for example, Philip went and found Nathanael, and verse 47, Jesus saw Nathanael coming to him, and he said of him, behold, an Israelite indeed, in whom is no guile. And Nathanael said to him, from where do you know me? And Jesus answered and said to him, before that Philip called you, before when you were under the fig tree, I saw you. And Nathanael praised Jesus. In verse 50, Jesus said, because I said that, are you believing you'll see greater things than these? Because Nathanael was a man with no guile, because Nathanael was a fair man, Jesus made him an apostle and built his church on him. Peter the Great of Russia, his greatest grief as a king was that Peter's son Alexei was found guilty of a capital crime, and the entire nation was on about it, and Peter had to take his son in court, guilty of this capital crime, and Peter the Great banged his gavel and pronounced his own son guilty of death and commanded him to be executed, and they carried it out. How much suffering would you go through if you had to condemn your own son to death like Peter the Great did? But that man figured the entire kingdom of Russia hangs on whether I'm fair or not. And we admire that aspect of him. Same thing with the apostles were elected by Jesus Christ because they were fair men, because they sought God's will and not their own. Same thing here. General versus specific authority. It's very easy to tell the difference between them. They sustain, I didn't know these were animated gifts here, an oak or a cherry tree or a maple tree. They're all kinds of wood. You say, okay, get me a plank made of oak or cherry or mahogany or golden retriever. You know right off the bat that we're not talking any sense. An animal, go get John a pet for his birthday, get an elephant or get a cow or get a camel or get him an oak tree. They don't sustain the same relationship to one another. Hebrews chapter 7 in verse 14, Hebrews 7:14 says, it is obvious that our Lord sprang out of Judah, of the which Moses spoke nothing concerning priesthood. We have the general idea of Israel. We have the specific tribes of Reuben and Simeon and Judah and Levi and Gad and Naphtali and so forth. Same thing for a furniture store. Spawn goes down and asks the bank for a loan because he's tired of running a construction door company and he wants to set up a furniture store. The bank says, you're going to sell furniture? Furniture's doing good nowadays. And so he goes out and he buys chairs, tables, stools, cabinets, beds, mirrors. The bank's fine. If the bank goes down to check out his business and he's got fiats on the lot, that's a different idea. It doesn't sustain the same relationship to its specific. We're going through all this because we're going to solve instrumental music real quick in a second. Easy as pie. let's say Jim and Terry give their kids $200 a piece for school clothes. Okay, and they come back, Judd comes back with a baseball cap. Does that fit under the $200 for school clothes? Okay, baseball cap might fit. Comes back with a Shania Twain album. Jed does. Does that fit under school clothes? That one's an easy no. He comes back with socks. Is that one okay? Yeah, that one's fine. Come back with a yo-yo. Is that a specific under the idea of clothes? No, see, this is pretty easy, first grade type stuff. Every word's a generic to some things and a specific to some others. We'll go through this quickly and then take a look at instrumental music. Jim tells Jed, yes, you may have a pet. He doesn't realize that Jed was swapped at the nursery and that Jed actually had Australian parents. So, he comes back, he takes the money he's got allotted for a pet, and he's got a kangaroo. Is he within his boundaries? Sure. So Jim now figures he has to be more specific. He says, Jed, please take the kangaroo back. I'm not having a kangaroo around here. Please go get a poodle. Jed buys a poodle. Is he within his rights to get a male or a female poodle, if that's all Daddy says? Absolutely. But now Daddy doesn't want a litter of poodles, so he says, Jed, please get a male poodle. At that point, when he says, Jed, get a male poodle, everything under it is authorized. That's why when God says, assemble, find a place, get together, everything under that is authorized. Upper room, gymnasium, across the street in a picnic park, in a building that you guys get together and build on Saturdays. He didn't specify get together at the park. He said assemble. That's why things under it are not specified. Okay, you could go right on down the line, miniature poodle, silver poodle, poodle with long ears, whatever it might be. A generic command includes all of its specifics. When I give you a specific one, that excludes all of the comparable specifics. How many times have you heard, through a basic misunderstanding of what Bible authority is all about, is God didn't say you can't? And we forget that everything we do in life, specific authority works this way. You're talking about a lawyer. You go to a hotel and you phone down for room service and you say, please bring up a tray of soda pop. Is that general authority for what kind of soda? Lady brings up 7-Up, brings up Mountain Dew, brings up Coca-Cola, she's all right. But when you call the next day and you say, please bring up 2 Coca-Colas. Is she within her right to bring up Fanta Orange? We're not inventing rules here. We're just pointing out obvious rules of grammar that apply in everything you do in life that we have to apply fairly and consistently to what we do in the Scriptures. If specific authority doesn't exclude, there's no limitation on any authority. When I say, please bring up Coke, if that doesn't mean she can bring up Coke and 7-Up and Sprite and ginger ale, then no language works at any time. When you guys tell me, Jeff, you may preach from 11:30 to 12:15. If I say, well, I will preach from 11:30 to 12:15, and I'll preach from 12:15 to 1:15. If that's what I construe you to mean, then there is no human communication possible. Here's those socks that we're talking about again. If we say, go get clothes, generic authority allows you to pick. But if mom has an idea that he's gone and got these kind of socks before, you know, then she might specify, say, go get yourself a black suit. So let's apply this to instrumental music, and then we'll have kind of made the idea, because we'll apply it to a specific problem in church authority. A lot of people think that we don't have a piano in here because we don't like a piano. I personally, I think that an acoustic guitar would help our singing a lot. That's my personal idea. It would change a lot of things too, but it would help our singing. It's not that we don't have a guitar because we hate guitars, and it's not like we don't have Kenny G because he's too pricey. We don't have guitars because there's a Bible reason for not having guitars. When God had told us to sing psalms and praise and hymn to us, if he had wanted to authorize this parallel specifics of singing or instrumental music or both, how would he have phrased that in general terms? He'd have said, make music unto me. Wouldn't that have been the grammar? Obvious enough. On the other hand, when God does not say make music, when he says sing and make melody in your heart, that excludes other specifics. The authority for a guitar and a pope and taking Lord's Supper on a Wednesday are all the same. They're ignoring the idea of the specifics versus the general. Let's turn to Acts chapter 16, for example. And here Paul and... Paul and Silas are in the jail in Philippi, and in Acts chapter 16, when they're down in the stocks, they decide not to feel sorry for themselves, but they decide rather to sing praises unto God. In Acts chapter 16, in verse 24, the jailer, having received such a charge, thrust them into the inner prison and made their feet fast in the stocks. And at midnight, Paul and Silas prayed and sang praises unto God, and the prisoners heard them. Now, Acts 16:25, Ephesians 5:19, sing, make melody in your hearts to the Lord. Colossians 3:16 says exactly the same thing. James chapter 5:13, is any merry, let him sing psalms. There are 9 different times in the New Testament we have a command or an example or a necessary inference of somebody making music to God, and each time they say singing. And they say, how do we know they didn't? Acts chapter 16, verse 25. They're in the jail in Philippi, and it says Paul and Silas sang praises to God. How do you know Paul didn't pull a harmonica out of his pocket and start wailing the blues? How do you know that? I don't know what they might have done. I don't know what they could have done. I don't know what they should have done. I don't know what they would have done. What I do know is what they did done. What did they do? They sang. 9 different times it says people made music to God, and we can prove that they sang. And so we're not going to go on and add other specifics along beside it. Not that we hate music, but because it's the first milligram of morphine a nurse prescribed instead of the doctor prescribing, this goes on and on to anything in the world, any aspect of worship service. Music, defined in the dictionary. Melody or harmony is heard in nature or art. Instrumental music's one kind. The dictionaries talks about a cappella music, which is a vocal or a singing kind of music. In the dictionary, you look up a cappella music literally in church style. For a long time, not just the Church of Christ, but denominations thought that bringing instruments of music into worship service ruined it. Because when I'm hearing a guitar, I'm essentially a passive receiver of entertainment. When I'm singing myself out of a book, I'm essentially an active participant in praising God. There's a good reason that we're told to sing together rather than to be entertained, because it focuses on giving to God, not on receiving ourselves, but that doesn't matter. All that matters is that we've got Bible authority for singing, whether or not we understand why. You could apply this to organization. You go to the New Testament and you can prove from many scriptures, for example, Acts 14, verse 23, Paul and Barnabas went around the churches they established, and they put them elders in every church working in that church. Titus chapter 1, verse 5, he tells Titus, for this reason I set you in Crete, that you should set in order the things that are wanting and ordain elders in every city. Now, if Jesus Christ had told us, organize the church as you see fit, that would leave us free to develop a pope or a synod or have elders or to put ourselves under the nation or whatever. But when he says, through command or example or necessary inference, organize the local churches by having elders in each group, does that leave us free to have a pope? Jenny did a psych study here this last week. There was a famous study in 1961. I'm forgetting the name of the guy, Simkin, I want to say, but that's not quite it. It's something like, in 1961, a psych experimenter took some psych students and he lined them up to see whether he could get them to shock people through intimidation. And the person being shocked was a sham. He wasn't really being shocked, but the guy recorded screams and begging and the whole nine yards. And let's just say the participants were Sam and Jenny and Tasha and Jenny and Scott. These psych students would sit down behind a pane of glass and they'd shock the guy at 10 volts or whatever. And Jenny's laughing because Scott would volunteer with gusto for this experiment. He wouldn't really, you know, but then the dummy behind the glass would say, ow, please, no more. And the students would look back at the teacher, and the teacher would say, he's signed, he's fine, there's a doctor back there, go ahead with the next one, and see whether they'd shock him the next time. Out of 40 students, each one of them, when intimidated by the teacher, went past 300 volts of shocking, despite the fact the guy was begging and blubbering. And most of them went up to 450 volts of shocking. The point is, if your general basis for determining right and wrong is that charismatic leader up there, you're going to do things you regret. If you've got figured out ahead of time, my standard for right and wrong comes from God, you can't be pushed into stuff like that. The same with us. We're going to be led by men, we're going to be led by God, and you can solve all types of church problems with nothing more than general and specific authority. You say, why can't I have the Pope? I can have the Pope for exactly the same reason I can have a piano. Because I don't buy the idea of specific authority that when I order two Cokes, you don't have the right to bring me two 7-Ups. It's that basic misunderstanding of grammar. Okay, I can have elders, but you didn't say not to have a Pope. Same thing. The New Testament, I can prove that they sung through command, example, and necessary inference. But maybe they wailed the blues on the harmonica. I don't know. I bring that in. The authority is exactly the same. I had a quote up here, and some reason I lost it off there. I was reading a debate on the internet just this last week about people asking whether you could have something other than unleavened bread and fruit of the vine. And most of the people were arguing unleavened bread and fruit of the vine is familiar to us, but not to people in other countries. They're arguing you can have whatever you want for the Lord's Supper if it's common to your culture, a basic staple of your meal is what they're getting at. And I lost the quote, but here's a guy arguing, I would have no problem with pizza and Coke for the Lord's table or whatever was a staple in that society. Why can't I have pizza and Coke next Sunday? God didn't say, have something to eat to remember me. If he had, then we would have pizza and Coke, right? Basic methods of determining right and wrong. But God did. There's a command, example, necessary inference for unleavened bread and fruit of the vine. Pizza and Coke is a parallel specific. We ain't going to do it. We don't have Bible authority. That's all there is to it. With many church problems, you say, why aren't we having instrumental music, whatever? It's because we're trying to stick to the word. Lord's Supper. If God said, take the Lord's Supper when you feel like it, he'd have given us general authority. The command, the example, and necessary inference is actually first day of the week. Your authority for taking the Lord's Supper on Saturday night or having a piano is exactly the same. What should you do for worship? You can prove in the New Testament they sang, they prayed, they preached, they taught the word, they gave their means, and they took the Lord's Supper. Magic shows, burning incense, kids' plays, all those things are just man-made doctrines that step outside the things that God told us to do, same as the authority for the piano. You shall not add unto the word which I command you, neither shall you diminish from it. I know a real estate agent who's not only an excellent real estate agent, but also a licensed stager. You know what a stager is in real estate? They can put furniture in your house at certain places and flowers at certain places, so you walk in there and it looks very inviting. Seriously, how do you think I would do as a stager? You put your house on the market, all the guys are kind of going, and all the girls are rolling their eyes and laughing. You know, you put your house on the market, and I come in and I arrange the trash bags in a relatively out-of-the-way space. You want your house designed by me, or you want your house designed by somebody competent? It comes down to, do we seek God via a path and a worship that we know for a fact that Jesus Christ and his apostles designed? Or we do it according to what Rick Warren, the best-selling author, designed. Who do you put your faith in? Galatians chapter 1, verse 8, though we or an angel from heaven should preach to you any other gospel, let him be accursed. Here's an example of it. In 1999, the Highland Church of Christ, which used to be a very sound, you know, and also a very large Church of Jesus Christ in 1999, advertised that they'd have, this would be just like us doing this. They advertise a meeting which is open to anyone interested in exploring our walk to Emmaus. They come up with this project. It'll begin at 6:30 p.m. We're going to assemble in the building. A 14-minute video will be shown that describes what the walk to Emmaus is all about. The remainder of the meeting will include the communion. So this is a Lord's Supper assembly. They're going to start running videos, 14 minutes long. Some of the local preachers went to say, are they just making a mistake on this, or is this a bad sign, or whatever? We're talking tendencies. Every mother on earth uses tendencies. It's not called American Idol, but there's a talent show where they were doing some singing we were watching on TV, and there was some guy up there competing for a $5 million record contract, and he's a rapper, and they're talking to him, and he goes through his story about how he was on drugs and his life was ruined, but now he's clean and he'd like the contract. And they asked him, how long you been clean? He said, 70 days. And they asked, how'd you get started? And he said, well, when I was young, I started smoking weed, and then it got into beer, and then I got into coke, and then it was meth. Is that closed-minded and bigoted of me to say most people on meth didn't start on meth? There's a tendency and a pattern. And in real life, a church that takes down the plaque that says Church of Christ and calls itself Community Church and says you don't have to be baptized to be saved, it didn't start with that. It starts with something the brethren will accept, something small. Anyway, the Highland Church does this. Here's a guy who wrote in Contending for the Faith, okay, I visited this little thing. I feared that the Highland congregation might play taped instrumental music during that video. Start getting the camel's nose under the tent. I was wrong. They didn't play tape music. They had the real thing, a band and four women singers. Women also led the singing with the mechanical instruments during the service part. Eddie Sharp, preacher for them, spoke and said, if we're to follow the light of Jesus wherever it leads us, meaning especially where our feelings take us. If it leads us to stay in our current church, fine. However, if the Spirit leads us to change churches, then we should do it. He said, some might be uncomfortable partaking of the communion on a day other than Sunday, so they can refrain from it. Okay, brethren, next week we're going to have the Lord's Supper on Wednesday. But if you don't like that, you don't have to. So are we cool? We're cool when we're making a good faith effort to follow book, chapter, and verse. That's when we're cool, aren't we? And if the day ever comes when I start saying, Thursday, you know, you don't have to if you don't want to, then you know what to do. They partook of it in a manner they coined as inctient, dipping the bread in the juice and eating it. I mean, it sounds like we're making a joke out of it, but that's what winds up happening. So, he who receives whomsoever I send receives me, and he who receives me receives him that sent me. It is clinging to the authority of the word that puts us on the path that God has set. And the church that does its level best to follow the design, the pattern that God has laid down. Philippians 4, verse 9. Those things that you have heard and seen and learned in me, those do, and the God of peace will be with you. If there's anyone here who would like to take advantage of this opportunity for repentance, prayer of the saints, whatever, the time's available to you now. Why don't you come forward as Lee leads us to number 609.